heroes have always been cowboys, and they still are, it seems. Sadly in search of one step in back of themselves and their slow moving dreams.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Monday morning. Real quick, I didn't get into it the last segment, but a programming note tomorrow on the program. Paul DeMarco, one of the regulars on this show, will be with us, and also Alabama Republican Party Chairman John Wall and another guest to be named later. So please tune in tomorrow. But joining us now, you've heard, we've been talking about this a lot this morning. But the chairman of the House Education Trust Fund Budget Committee, Danny Garrett, joins us on the line. Representative, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. Great to be with you.
Hey, thanks for making time. I do appreciate it. So the topic really, and I know you dealt with it some last week, Chairman, the change to this formula, and you guys have been working on this for some time. This isn't necessarily something new. It just came up in the news because of your committee, the joint committee that convened last week. The formula on how education money from the state is distributed to the various school systems around the state. Walk us through that and why what we have now needs at least some attention, you think?
Yeah. Well, first of all, let me just clarify that we've not made any decision to change the funding formula or have any preconceived ideas. But what we do know, and Dr. Mackey, State Superintendent, verified in the meeting the other, last week, is that the current formula we have is not something you would describe as adequate. And it is unlike any other formula in any other state in the country. 45 states have moved away from the model that we use to a different type of model. And these are very complex models, and a lot of considerations have to go into it. And also each state differs because of their tax structures and the nuances of their law and things like that. But we know that when you look at Alabama's educational outcomes, pretty much by most any measure, we're at the bottom. And what every previous study that we've had that looks at how we fund the education in the state tells you, it's not adequate. It wasn't adequate 30 years ago. And even now with the changing world we're in, it's not keeping pace with changes in our economy or in our demographics. So all we're doing at this point is basically saying, look, we need to tee this up again and discuss it and see if we believe, can we validate that it's not adequate, look at what other states are doing, and determine if any of that would be applicable to Alabama. We started these discussions about a year ago. Dr. Mackey was with us in the very initial meeting, and at the we're now trying to, we decided to get, so Chairman Orr and I decided to, that we would use our budget committees as a vehicle to at least vet the initial diligence on this effort. And then at some point, if we decide to move forward, then we will need to expand this to include a lot of different groups, education groups. Of course, the governor's office is already engaged with us. So we're in a discovery period right now. But what I can tell you is that we basically, if you want to oversimplify it, the way we fund education in Alabama now is that in Montgomery, we determine every system needs X number of teachers per student. Every system needs X amount of money per student for transportation. That's kind of the way we do it. Then we divide that big pot up to each system based on headcount. We're not looking at the specific needs of a district. So what if you move from that type of model, which is a resource, a cost model, to a student needs model, you would look at systems and you would score those systems based upon those student needs. If you have a system that has a high degree of poverty, high level of poverty, that would be a weighting factor for that. A system or that has a high number of special needs students would be weighted accordingly because it costs more to educate and to address those issues. If you have a system that has a high number of English, you know, ESL students, gifted students, there are a number of different things. But you would weight that system, and the money would be allocated based upon the needs of systems. And you would not, you'd move away from a one-size-fits-all based on headcount to trying to direct money to systems based on their needs.
And what occurs to me is, like, really what's taken kind of a directing ball, if you would, figuratively speaking here, to the status quo. I mean, it is this immigration sort of policy that the federal government has bestowed upon the country. But this English as a second language thing seems to be like a very big problem that, look, if you're going to have an influx of migrant students, the school system still wants to educate those students, and they don't turn many people away, but not all students are created equal. It does take a special skill set to deal with these students, primarily a bilingual teacher, which those just, you know, not all teachers are bilingual, right?
Right. Well, you know, I think that the kind of drivers that the federal government has mandated that public schools provide a lot of services with respect to special needs, and there's a wide spectrum of special needs, and they've expanded that scope of special needs. And the federal government has mandated that the public schools educate any child that is in that system. So certainly a child that comes in the system that doesn't speak English would be one. There's a number of different things like that that are being mandated by the federal government. And under our current funding model in the state, we're not basically funding that. We're not addressing that. We're not providing any support at all. So the funding for those initiatives in each district has to come from either federal money, which there's a limit on that, or from local money or from the local. And some systems that are affected by those issues don't have the local money. And so, and then you've got also the correlation between high poverty and dense poverty. And some of the remote areas, the rural areas of the state, we have a lot of remote issues. You have students traveling a long way. So certainly transportation is a more of a factor there than it may be in another district. So all this doing is what 45 other states have done, most recently Tennessee and Mississippi, is shift to say we're going to go to this model that now looks at all of these impacts that have changed in the last 30 years. And that's what systems are doing. Now, what set this thing off last week was I had read where Dr. Mackey had made a comment to the state school board, and then apparently to some reporters earlier last week, that to do this, we would require a $2 billion statewide tax increase, and it would require that we shift money from wealthy districts to poor districts. And of course, that's not been on our radar. That's not something we're looking at doing. Chairman Orr and I would not recommend to our committees that we consider such a proposal. So last week, having read that comment, I gave Dr. Mackey the opportunity to clarify his comments. He said three times in his remarks to the committee that he felt like this was absolutely an effort we should be looking at. And he also wanted to be a part of it. He supported the effort, and he also understood the ground rules that we had. And so, you know, that's where we are.
So I think that's the fear, at least in my mind here. Here you have in this state, I mean, a lot of communities around the state will pay higher property taxes to bolster the whatever funding's coming in for their public schools. And, I mean, they have all their own reasons, but it's the haves and the have-nots. And I guess the question would be, when you start tinkering with that formula, how do you not take away from the haves to give to the have-nots? I know you're not at that stage, but that would be the concern, right?
Yeah. Well, the first thing you do is that there's about, and I don't hold me to this number, but I think it's about $2.5 billion of local money that's right now outside the funding formula that we use at the state. That $2.5 billion in our marching orders and our ground rules we laid forth to the consultants that are going to help us analyze all of this and to our committee, we've said that $2.5 billion will remain outside this formula. So any system that has been a local issue, our mindset and our ground rule is, number one, that money will not be affected by what we do now. So that's local money stays with the locals. Number two, we don't want any system to lose. So now how does that happen? You know, because right now, if you look at the calculations, you'll find that some of the more affluent systems receive less state money per pupil than some of the poorer systems under the current formula. And that would, you know, that's how it is in the day. We would not be looking, we do not want any system to have less funding than they would get going forward. So how you do that, I don't know. I don't. Number one, is it possible that we can come up with a model that addresses all the ground rules we set forth? We think so, but we don't know. We'll find out. But what we would do would be to make sure, you know, we set aside a couple of reserves. We had this new educational opportunity fund, and part of that fund that's building right now, we believe needs to be utilized for the changes in the education community. Part of it could be to help us transition to the funding that we're talking about under this funding model change. The other would be if school choice really takes hold and starts to really be a big demand, we'll need, you know, to address that. So one of the reasons for this new education opportunities reserve fund that right now has about 700 million in it, will, or maybe a billion in it now, but after this year, but about a billion in it, will actually be available for us to look at some of these changes we want to make to the current way we fund education in the state. But our ground rule one is that no system loses money, that no local money gets brought into this formula or change, be impacted by the change. And so those are just basic ground rules that are important to both Chairman Orr and myself as the chair of this effort, and then I'm sure our committees feel the same way.
Well, and you look at this, I mean, when we start talking about these metrics and we talk about demographics and special needs, I mean, would it be feasible or would this be a possibility that maybe some people in the legislature say, hey, look, we're not performing as well. Our test scores aren't as high as Mountain Brook, Vestavia, Madison, or wherever. We need more money. You got to make this part of your criteria, even though these systems that I just mentioned are doing it right. They're paying more taxes. They're electing competent people to their school board. And these other systems don't really, maybe aren't as taking as much as the local buy-in as they, the others are.
I think some systems, the reality is some systems don't have that local support. So that's an issue. We've got to, you know, and we're required under the Constitution to provide public education. It needs to be adequate public education, which by the superintendent's own admission, what we currently do today is not adequate. They say it's equity, but it's not adequate. And that gets into the weeds of the deal. But I would say too, like when you look at how you look at a system, some of the rural systems are really struggling with the ESL issue right now. Some systems have 50 to 60% of their students are ESL. And just think about it, the state's not really giving them any support at all. So whatever support they get is diluted by that effort, which is of course impacting education for all the kids in that state and the resources in that school system. Some of this, they've been able to get along because with all the influx of ESSRA money and money from COVID and whatnot, there was federal money that came down that was kind of a stopgap for some of this, but that's going away. That's gone away. So that's an issue. Then you have other systems, and some of these are some of the more fluent systems, where they have a huge special needs effort. They've kind of become a magnet for some of the special needs. I talked to one CFO in an area of Metro Birmingham, Assistant Metro Birmingham, that has five special needs students that they're required to educate, you know, under the federal requirements. And that those five students cost that system $900,000 a year. And that's having to come out of the local coffers. And this is not a system that has a lot of local money available. So it's an issue where you're going from basically the Montgomery determining what every system in the state, you know, has to have on a per pupil basis and giving that money out to basically saying, look, we're going to look at each system, score it, and then allocate the money to try to help provide for some of those student needs that are different from district to district. It's complicated, and again, we've laid out ground rules. Chairman Orr went through those the other day, and there were about four or five really ground rule principles. One being no system loses money. Second is that no local money is brought into the equation in terms of what we're doing at the state level, and there were a few other things. But, of course, part of this, too, is transparency, because this formula would ultimately give local systems more flexibility in how they spend their money, because the system in the rural area is very different from Mountain Brook. So what they need would be different. And so we've given more flexibility, but you've got to have the accountability as well. Well, so, you know, we're at this point, we're not sure that what we want to do is even possible, but we need to do the diligence to see it. But we do know right now that what we're doing is not really even a pure funding formula. I never really pure foundation program formula. I never heard it said that, but Dr. Mackey said it the other day. He said, "Well, he said anybody outside of Alabama would look at what we do and would say that's not really a foundation program." So twice there have been studies done. They've all reached the same conclusion, but nobody's ever acted on it. And now we're just at least in the diligence to see if we need to move forward with some changes.
Well, and this is my last question. We're wrapping up on this. Assuming, and this is, I guess, maybe a little theoretical, but or hypothetical, if you were to able to find the formula that suited everybody and you got it through and you're providing more resources for ESL, special needs, or whatever is that y'all determine, how do you tell the local systems that this is what you need to use this money for? Are you, I mean, is the legislature able to do that? Or does it fall under the like a local control issue or the state school board? Like, how do you say that you have to use this money for this need?
One of our ground rules has to do with transparency and accountability. And so you would be looking for those outcomes. So if a system, you know, if we've scored a system assuming that it's got, you know, a high ESL situation, we would that system will have money, discretion how they utilize their money. But we will certainly be, from the legislative standpoint, the State Department will be monitoring this and the legislature as well, because we're wanting to see outcomes. So I don't know if that answers your question or not, but I mean, you know, we would score that system and we would expect those funds to be utilized to improve that that situation, address that situation. And that's key to one of our ground rules was the transparency and the outcomes, because if locals have more flexibility, we certainly want them to improve outcomes. That's the whole point of this.
Well, I guess it'd be this, like, say all of a sudden one benefits from the formula changing and the system gets a bunch of money, but they decide we're going to build a new football stadium or whatever. No. I mean, how do you keep that happening?
We specifically talked about that as you drew, that these funds would not be available for that. There's a lot of confusion anyway around the state about, you know, what education money is used for, because a lot of those capital programs you're talking about are coming from bond issues or from supplemental monies or different type things. This would not be, these funds we're talking about, these foundation program funds, would not be available for things like that. And we've had that discussion as part of our ground rules as well, but they're really not currently, and they would not be going forward. This is all about the academic center. In fact, Senator Orr actually asked that question you just asked, to make the point, to let people understand that, you know, that's not what we want to do.
Chairman, we got to leave it there. Thanks for hopping on this morning and talking to us about this.
Sure. Well, thank you for your questions, and anytime, call me anytime.
All right. State Representative Danny Garrett there from Trustville, Education Trust Fund Committee Chairman. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Ford Show on FM Talk 106.5.